FYOP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus star?
Ratchet, will you take the chorus star?
Transformers! Defenders of truth! Robots who fight in disguise!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 202. This has been recorded, is being recorded Friday, May 27th, 2016. I'm your host, Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Joining me this evening is Headmaster Don.
Hey, buddy.
Jim Black.
Hello to all of you who are not watching X-Men Apocalypse right now.
Megamus.
Hello, hello.
And Plasticon.
Hey, how you guys doing?
I was
going to say, and if you're planning on going and watch X-Men Apocalypse, just watch the 90s Fox Kids cartoon. It's just as good, if not better.
Absolutely.
Well, I was getting ready to say, Plasticon's here for that random G2 reference, so just brace yourself, people.
Yeah, you never expect the G2.
He was showing it off earlier, but I think we'll highlight it now.
He was showing the G2 stuff off, not...
Yeah. Showing it off.
Right. We're going to be clear right here.
Now this is an exclusive. I'm buying my first pair of bifocals. Plasticon, don't make it worse.
Ladies.
But he was showing off his custom South Florida swoop. So, folks.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, my custom South Florida swoop, which is like extremely neon, and it's so awesome. And it is a G1 mold for our listeners. I did completely disassemble it and paint it. I'll probably be doing like reviews and like commercials and stuff like that for
it. It looks like Poland Chainsaw green to me. You know, that real bright green they put on Poland Chainsaws.
Yeah, well, that's about as close as you can possibly get to like actually having the real thing.
You should put little palm trees on the sides of his wings and everything, and a little pink flamingo where the Autobot signet goes.
An orange Autobot signet that looks like an orange.
Honestly, I debated like on the whole back half of it to just do like some kind of like crazy fade, so it looked like it was like a sunset or like palm trees or something going on.
Looking at that shade of green, it almost looks as though it would be pistachio flavored.
Ah, yeah.
Putting vibe from it.
Don't lick the swoop.
Just did. Ooh, might die from lead paint. Oh my god, lead paint poisoning.
Well, that's a little bit of a highlight of what we're going to be talking about later in this episode. We're going to be taking a look at the Dinobots. We'll be looking at them individually and as a group. Talking about their fame in the fandom, because you know, I mean, they've gotten a lot of third party love in the last year or two, and continue to be. You know, I know Gigapower just revealed the painted chrome prototypes of their Grassler, Looks pretty good. I'm happy with my Fans Toys one, but you know it does look pretty good.
So is this their first one since they released their Snarl?
It seems like they release one like every 2 years.
Okay, well, I was gonna say
it's like really slow.
I was gonna say because it's like we've got at least two Fans Toys since that Gigapower Snarl came out.
I would dare say three. I think we got Sever. I think we got Soar, Sever, and Stomp in that time. I'm wanting to say.
Wow.
Yeah, but at any rate, you know, we'll be talking a little bit about that, and then we'll also kick off things by talking about stickers versus tampo graphics. A lot of people think, you know, what are tampo graphics? Well, this is Combiner Wars Smokescreen, and that Autobot insignia on him, the 38, those are tampo graphics. They're factory applied, painted on graphics that were, you know, by all intents and purposes, if this were a G1 toy, they would have been stickers. We saw a lot of tampo graphics on G1 reissues, especially the Hasbro ones later on. You know, they looked a lot cleaner. But we'll take a little bit of a closer look at that here very shortly. But before we do, I do want to highlight our sponsors, CapturePrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com, where you can save even more on orders of $150 or more with free domestic shipping. CapturePrey.com. Also, Mega Toy Fan. Check out Mega Toy Fan at the biggest robot and toy conventions year round. Maximize your collections with megatoyfan.com. Also, I want to tell people to check out Unicron.com's TFDB database app for the Android phones. I believe it may even be available on the iPhone as well and other mobile applications. It's a great little resource that you can use on the go. You can scan barcodes, you can see great pictures of the items and find out information on Transformers that you may not know something about. And it's a great little mobile platform. Millions of downloads already. You can find it on the Google Store. And speaking of the Google Store, you can find us now on Google Play. So if you're on an Android device and want to subscribe and download us each week, you can listen to our episodes live. Well, not live, but you can listen to our episodes via the Google Play Store in the Google Play Music area. So check that out. Please like and subscribe to us on iTunes and wherever else you consume this podcast. We thank you for listening to us. So without further ado, let's talk about stickers versus tampos. Now, back in Generation 1, and I'm going to use it as an example because it's handy, and also we're going to be talking about Dinobots later on in this episode. But for our video viewers, this is my childhood G1 Snarl. He's seen some better days. He's been well loved. But as you can see, the stickers are rather worn. The edges are rather tattered. Some of them are faded, just completely worn out. You know, that is probably one of the biggest complaints that I see on vintage toys. But what are some other things that hinder people from using stickers? Anybody want to jump out with that one?
I think one of the viewers actually said it. They don't feel that their skill of putting them on is up to par, that they get them crooked or, you know, creased or whatever. They just don't feel they would rather have them factory applied than for them to put it on themselves. Now, conversely, I know some people that actually take great pride in that. They like that as part of it. You know, you buy the toy, you get to sticker it up, and that's part of the fun of getting the vintage toy. So there's two sides right there on why someone would like the tempos as opposed to the stickers.
What about you, Jim? What do you think about stickers versus Tampo graphics?
Well, depending on the figure, I love them, but also hate them in a lot of instances. You know, there are some circumstances where, you know, the stickers may be in a position where they can be worn down easily based on transformation and parts rubbing together. Or sometimes maybe the stickers aren't even printed right, or if they are, maybe they rub off easily. So you're left with like a silvery piece of paper. Tampo graphs, by the same token, I've seen where they can rub off or chip easily, or might be misprinted. So, I mean, really, it's just a matter of your personal preference, whatever you, the collector, think looks better. I mean, on newer figures, I find that it is, you know, easier to have the Tampo graphs with the more complex transformations and all, that stickers just wouldn't be able to survive more than maybe one or two transformations. G1, you know, was better for stickers and that they were more a product for their time, I think. But I don't think that they would really work out all that well today. With the exception of maybe figures such as, I don't know, Generations Roadbuster and Whirl, ones like that. But very, very rare instances.
I was actually going to bring up Generations Roadbuster and Whirl. They actually went old school. Mm-hmm. And included sticker sheets. I really appreciated that.
Which I think is funny because, at least from my experience, those two have, in G1, have the worst stickers ever. They curl like as soon as you put them on. Just, I guess, because it had that clear, it was a clear backing with the writing and everything on it. When you put the sticker on, to find a Whirl, or especially a Roadbuster with a nice chest Autobot emblem that isn't curled, and applied straight, is pretty rare. So those stickers to me just they didn't hold up. So, well, but it's neat that they went back to those.
Maybe they included them with Whirl and Roadbuster as a. We're sorry. Oops, my bad. Kind of.
I'm sure they're worried about what they did. What is that? 30 years ago.
Hey, I'm just trying to find some answers here.
Well, with Roadbuster also being in the records, that was probably another reason that you could put them on a record shelf for a G1 shelf.
Now those stickers on the G1 version. You said those were on like a clear.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in a. And if I would have planned ahead, I actually have a sticker sheet of it. Omega Supreme had them where it's just a clear – if you took the whole sticker off, you know, didn't take them individually, just the whole thing, it would be a clear piece of, like, tape with all the little stickers on it.
If that's the case, could it be maybe the plastic used for that might be stretching out a little bit in the direction that they're pulled from the sticker
sheet?
Maybe that causes the curling?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that the, for lack of a better term, the more paper, thicker stock, like Prowl,
yeah,
seemed to have lasted longer. Mm. I think they were more vibrant, and I see those less in disrepair than others. Now, granted, also, think about, like you said, where things rub and everything. I mean, how many stickers rub on Blue Streak, Prowl? They just, you know, smoke screen. There's not many spots where they do. So that was just good sticker placement. However, trying to get the two back panels underneath the back windshields and get those straight without disassembling it, that's a trick.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter follower James Anderson at Fox for Naught said he prefers graphics already on the toy. He finds stickers too cumbersome and is never able to line them up just right. And for those of you who are listening live, you can interact with us on our Facebook group or on Twitter at TFYLP, monitoring that during the show. So if you have any comments or questions, feel free to tweet us at TFYLP or post it on our Facebook group. But yeah, I kind of agree with him. Also, listener Robert Waller said on Facebook, I don't really mind stickers as long as they are good quality. Having the ability to choose what details you like is a plus. Mm-hmm. I like the Tampo graphics better. They at least last longer and hold up to wear better, but they also add to overall cost. They can, but I don't think it's such a huge cost factor.
I agree. You're talking about maybe pennies.
Yeah.
And, I mean, let's face it. The tempo also costs money too. So yeah. I mean, it's a balancing act. But
yeah.
So I don't agree with that 100%. But
look at Combiner Wars. Wheeljack is a great example. He is as bland as they come. I mean, he's barely got any tampos on him at all. And I thank God for people like Repro Labels that put out that set that makes him look so much better. I mean, he looks great with all the color, but otherwise he's just bland white and black, and that's it.
You know, some characters like Jazz, who is basically white and blue with some red highlights, you don't need a lot of detail because you're too far away from the character design if you have too much stickers on there. It's sort of like, you know, for our Sentai Kamen Rider fans, it's like, I've brought this up before, it's like Figure Arts versus SIC. Figure Arts is more of a streamlined, show accurate, and SIC is your hyper detailed line. And it's some characters, if it's too detailed or too many stickers, you lose the character in the overall add-ons. But for me, I'm one of those weird people, obviously. I don't care really about either. But tampos, generally, they'll highlight the main tampos, like Smokescreen has the 38. He has the Autobot symbol. And that's usually all I need. But during G1, other than an Autobot sticker, I very rarely labeled anything. I didn't put any labels when I got my original Star Convoy. I just don't label stuff. Just one, it's my skill level. That's why I don't do Gundam kits. So much the details on the smaller kits are stickers, and they look like crap when I do them. But my big thing is it's paint. If a figure is properly painted, I can live without tampos or stickers because at least the character will look like he should. And I'm going to use Jazz again, but I'm going to use Reveal the Shield Jazz as an example. Look at Hasbro's basic U.S. version, how bland and how just lackluster that figure is. And then look at other uses of that mold when you actually have paint applied. Stickers would have never made that figure correct, in my opinion. Paint is what you needed. So, yeah. Again, that's just me. It's not a question of tampos versus – I prefer tampos because I'm suck at stickers. And if you give me stickers, I only maybe put one or two on. I just want the figure painted properly.
I do very much the same thing whenever it comes to like third party. And here's a good example: the Fans Toys Sever, the Snarl, Masterpiece Snarl. He comes with some painted on detail, like the sides of the dino and everything. But most of his details, because like you know, I showed here's a G1 Snarl. He's got some color graphics there at the top, which the Fans Toy version really doesn't. I mean, he's got some color there. He's got the silver on the red, but it's not really there. But what I do is very minimal on these. I am very happy with the way they look right out of the box, except I put the Autobot insignias on them. And what I do with that is, I don't know if anybody remembers the episode where we had Repro Labels on here. You take like an X-Acto knife and put the sticker on the very, very tip, the sharp tip of the X-Acto knife, and you can like gently lay it in the general area where you want it, but not hard enough on the surface to where that it appliques to it, but you can still slide it back and forth to the proper position where it looks just right to you, and then press down on it. And that's what I do with my insignias and stuff.
Because I just recently got Stomp, and even if this guy came with the sticker sheet, the only thing I would be doing is I'd be putting an Autobot symbol right there because they molded a spot for one to go.
I love that too.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, because he is fine out of the box, and a lot of labels will pull your eyes away from seeing how nice the figure is. Absolutely. But again, third party is kind of a it's the whole thing where budget kind of goes out the window when, like, because you've seen third party stuff that has a lot of paint on it because the budget is, they're not constrained by the budget Hasbro is, but you know, that's just me, you know, I'd rather have it painted properly and minimal stickers to have to apply or tampos that'll hit the highlights and I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I just want the figure to look good the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, just if it looks good without adding stickers to it, then why bother? But you know, some people have their other preferences. For example, Facebook listener Blake Jones said sometimes they add to the figure. I actually really like the stickers for the Superion and Minasaur set. I'm assuming he's referring to the Repro Label set. However, I would prefer these added details to be applied in the graphics, as in, I guess, tampo, so that he doesn't have to worry about the stickers peeling off. So in some aspects, more graphics can make the figure more appealing, as in Combiner Wars Wheeljack. But in some cases, they're a little bit much. They're not really needed, in my opinion. But some people love, you know, the detail to the extreme. And speaking of detail to the extreme, let's talk about Plasticon here.
Yeah, I'm more of the sticker kind of guy. I hate tampos. Tampos are a pain in the butt to me. I just don't like them. I never have. I don't know. It seems like about any figure I've ever seen come out, there's always been an issue with the paint or the tampoing for, like, a lot of modern figures. If you look at everything from G1 and Generation 2, G2 actually did have, I believe they were the very first one that actually had tampo. And it basically was the insignia of the faction and Autobot or Decepticon on the actual toy. But the rest of it, there was no tampoing. That was it. You got stickers the entire time. Sadly, we don't have we talked about the lack of figures being sent to Repro Labels for them to be able to do G2 figures, which is sad. But it's one of those things that some of us had to kind of get over the hump when it comes to certain stickers. But to me, when it comes to guys that are like me that like to customize toys, tampoing is the worst thing in the world because it's so difficult sometimes to cover that the correct way with paint.
Especially if it's a tampo on an already painted area. If you need to remove that tampo graphic, then you've also got to risk taking off some of the paint that you want to leave that's underneath.
Not to mention if you don't use the right type of removal techniques, because some people do like to use chemicals to get rid of some of that stuff. If you use the wrong kind, you can warp and also cause the plastic to basically turn into chewing gum. You just have to be really aware of that when you're trying to remove, because, I mean, everybody knows I do a lot of G2 customs. Most of my stuff is G1, and I have done a few modernized ones, and I tend to find those are more of a pain. I just have to kind of just try to cover the paint where the tampoing is more, because I can't really sand all of it off, because if I do, I get rid of the molded detail, the plastic as well, which is another thing that's very difficult to deal with. And if any of you guys out there do Shapeways, I've got a piece of Shapeways part here. It's like a bonnet to a Combiner Wars figure. These things you have to sand down. And if you sand it down too far, you'll get rid of a lot of the detail, and that's kind of just an idea, you know, that gives you guys a little bit of a heads up of what happens, especially if you're going to put stickers on this after painting it. I mean, that's like I said, I'm more of the guy that doesn't like tampos, never did. I had some G1 reissues that had tampo, and I really wasn't happy with it. For some reason, to me, it looked really weird having a G1 reissue on a G1 shelf and everything else is stickers, and that's tampoed. It just looks so out of place. So that's just something, I don't know if anybody's really that nitpicky about it, but myself, I kind of was. I just, like, my twin cast I had was a reissue twin cast. It was weird having him stand next to Blaster where you can clearly see the stickers, and you look at him, and he's all tampoed. So there is a difference, but there are pluses, like we were talking about, when it comes to some of the tampoing, like the cassettes. Your sets are a pain in the butt for G1 because the stickers try to fall right off because of the way they're designed to look like an actual cassette. But if you get any of the tampoed reissue ones, it's all on there and it never comes off. So there are pluses and minuses to this, but my suggestion is if you are wanting to get into customization or if you're into that, avoid tampos. They're a pain. Try to go for stickers because it's easier to add that detail back with a sticker than it is to try to tape around the tampo or whatever to try to make that tampo survive.
Yeah. I remember one of the very few customs that I actually attempted to do was alternator smoke screen. I can't remember what I took to remove all the tampo graphics. That was all of the car. You know, it had all the yellow swirls and stripes and then the numbers. And I removed all of that to take it and paint it in the G1 smokescreen deco with the red roof and all that. I disassembled the figure and it literally took me a day or two of hard rubbing and one as to not damage the toy so that it would still look good finished, and two to make it look right whenever I was done. I mean, it was really a pain in the butt to remove all that stuff.
Oh, it can be. There are things that some people try to use, like fingernail polish remover and stuff like that. And if anybody out there is wanting to attempt that and they hear they use fingernail polish remover, avoid the acetone. Acetone will eat into plastic quickly. You won't realize it until you've actually already applied it about a minute later. Like I use, I'll use like rubbing alcohol or fingernail polish remover that's non-acetone, but normally I use like a Q-tip. And sometimes you'll go through 5 or 6 Q-tips just to get rid of one small tampo because sometimes it's that hard to get rid of a tampo. And that's why I kind of avoid tampos on customs because it's very difficult to do. Now, you do have the problem with if you're wanting to try to change the faction logo on, say, an Armada toy, there's no tampo for really the insignia. The insignia is molded. So it's even more difficult to try to get rid of that because you actually have to sand that down completely to change the faction logo on it. Like, say, if you wanted to take Armada Wheeljack and turn him into an actual Decepticon versus just the Autobot logo scratched out, you'd have to sand that entire logo down to be able to swap that out. And Repro Labels does a beautiful job with stickers. So my suggestion, if you are a customizer, invest in getting some Repro Labels. Have the extra money set aside for that kind of thing. Is it something you're not going to be able to avoid? Yeah. And honestly, the stickers that you get from Repro Labels are some of the most high-quality stickers I've ever come across. They're great, and they actually do G.I. Joe ones, which is a big plus for the guys out there that like Joe stuff, like we were talking about the clear stickers earlier. So there are G.I. Joe stuff being done the same way with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to bring up Repro Labels toy hacks because I can't tell you how many times I've seen a sticker kit that they've done that I won't, like Alternator's Wheeljack. I wanted that kit to really change that Wheeljack from blue into the proper greens and everything. But even kits not that extensive, I know my sticker abilities are so bad, I would ruin a perfectly good set of stickers. And I've never bought any of the stickers I've wanted to just because I know I'm going to screw them up. That's why I never did the BotCon customizing classes. I can't build. I failed shop class in high school. How many people fail shop class in high school? Not many. So, you know, I would really waste my money on a beautiful sticker sheet and have a figure that would look like some kind of Autobot Spike by the time it was done. So, you know, but if you've got the skill, a good sticker sheet can totally change a toy, but I'm not that confident.
I was about to say one of the recent things I actually stickered up was the Wheeljack with the Repro Label stickers from Combiner Wars. And I happen to own two of them. I've got one that's non-stickered and one that is. And those stickers, like we were saying earlier, add so much to it. it really does make that toy much better than what Hasbro originally released. And it's something, if, like Don said, if you're not good at doing stickers, get a friend that is. Send it to them and then, you know, make a deal with them or something, or send it back or whatever. Just be friends and help each other out with this kind of thing. Because there are some people that they're afraid to spend that money, like that $15, $20 to get that sticker sheet to make that one toy look the way he wants it. You know, give, you know, that's what you need to do in order to help each other out in the community. Try to help each other with this type of thing, because this is something a lot of people struggle with.
You know, overall, I think, and here's my opinion on it, is that I like both, even though, you know, sometimes Tampos actually make the whole figure. If it weren't for the Tampos, Combiner Wars Wheeljack is a good example, like you were just talking about. You know, if there's no Tampos or hardly any Tampos on it, the toy is boring and bland. And it just doesn't capture the character like it should. Adding a few Tampos of red and green here and there, and a black windshield would have changed that toy tremendously. But adding the Repro Label set made it better. So there's a bit of give and take there. I'm on both sides. I like Tampos. They can be nice and clean. You don't have to worry about messing them up. Although they could be like my MP11T Thundercracker, who's got the jacked up Tampo Decepticon insignia on his nose cone. You know, I mean, it's on there. It's got the purple, but the silver part of it is like just maybe a millimeter too high. And so it looks like it's a blurred Decepticon insignia. And so that's when Tampos can go wrong.
We have a Facebook, listener, and I'm going to try with the names again. It's Emmett. I think it's Stresovich,
I believe.
Yeah. He says stickers, just another way to bring an interactive touch to an already engaging toy. Exactly. Just one more thing of interacting. Just, you know, they're Transformers after all. You know, well, they're made to be played with. They're made to be transformed. They're made to be handled.
That's my biggest thing for stickers is that, okay, you got a Transformer, for example, Snarl. I mean, he's still right here. You know, you got a Transformer. He's a great toy in and of itself. But there's the added play value and of spending the time with the toy and carefully placing the stickers on. I mean, I'm not really good at it, but you know, it does add to the fun. And here's another thing, another way I look at it. So what if I do put a sticker on there that's just slightly askew? That toy, that sticker, in that particular placement makes that toy mine. You know, it is entirely mine. I look at some of my original toys that I still have. I have so very few of them, and some of the stickers are, you know, a little bit cockeyed or something, and they're not quite right, but they've been like that since my childhood. And I look at that toy and I accept it because that was me that put that sticker there, not some factory machine or factory person or some other person that I bought the toy from. I put that sticker there, and it adds that little personal touch to the toy. And that's my biggest plus for stickers.
There's one thing I could touch base here. A lot of people don't tend to think about, but Action Masters, the only sticker that's ever on them is the insignia. Mm-hmm. But the bad thing is about this is you've got a lot of different kind of paints that are put on there, and then you get one that is kind of beat up, and there's no way to fix that. Now, if it was stickers and Repro Labels does stickers, you're able to repair that. And that's actually a plus side to stickers versus a Tampo. I've seen Tampos on like recent Power Ranger toys and stuff like that. rubbing away, if it rubs completely away, how do you replace that? If nobody's made like a sticker to go over it or any way to be able to repair that. And that's something I know a lot of people, they're pretty adamant about how they display their toys. Now, if you are keeping one, like I do, I have an original R2-D2, and he is my original one from when I was a kid. It has a sticker that goes all the way around the barrel of it. That sticker is tore up. I could replace it, but there's a little bit of that appeal that we were just talking about, Daron.
I see what you mean.
Appeal, right? Of just the battered and torn upness of it. So there's times that you don't get rid of that type of thing. I mean, you just can't get rid of it because it's something that you love because you had it since it's a kid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be pristine, but why? So sometimes stickers add a bit of character to something. Like one thing I really think they missed out on with the G2 Minasaur set that they released with Combiner Wars is they could have given us stickers. Stickers would have really made that feel more like a G2 thing because G2 had tons of stickers all the time. And that's something that I think they kind of missed the boat on a little bit. Although the sticker tamp, are all the tamp wings, beautiful on it. Gorgeous toy. But, I mean, honestly, a lot of us G2 guys out there would have been like, it would have been cool if it actually came with stickers. Because you were talking about the playability. I love it. I love stickers.
It needed to come with a DVD of the G2 commercial, you know, with a brand new Minasaur wrap or something is what it needed to come with.
With the CyberNet Space Cube. Well. Real quick question about the G2 Minasaur and Superion and all them. I've not actually picked up either of those sets just yet. I know they tried to be as spot on as possible to the vintage toys as far as detail for detail, you know, the sticker art to the new tampographs. Did they by chance happen to transfer the where it says Autobot or Decepticon in the tampograph and have that on the Combiner Wars toy as well? Or did they leave that feature out?
That's a feature that I think they really totally dropped the ball on. Okay. They did not put that anywhere on there. And to be honest, they could have tampoed it like maybe like on take Wild Rider here, for instance. If they would have, they could have easily tampoed Wild Rider or even Decepticon on the inside of the foot and allow you to still be able to close it and it not take away from its robot mode. I mean, there's stuff like that they could have easily done. I'm not complaining, but I still think it's like it's a missed opportunity. It's that one little added touch they could have gave us on top of a few stickers. Now, one thing I can tell you about, and something that I noticed, if anybody out there knows anything about G2 Breakdown is supposed to have always had this crazy splash thing on his top. And let me fix this real quick because I got him here in robot mode, guys. So give me a second. This plastic on struggles with new engineering. sec here. Just going to flip this down. I actually have a World's Smallest Breakdown. And the World's Smallest Breakdown comes with extra stickers. Well, I took one of the extra stickers and slapped it on the top like that to finish it out. Because he should have had, like, this blood crazy splatter thing on the top. What's funny is Wild Rider got his tampo on top like he should have. And I think that's a missed thing that they – I don't know if they overlooked that or if it was something they budget cut. But to be honest, it's something they really could have done. And that's the whole thing. It's like G2 guys, we know what should be on proper ones because we've – handled it. Most of us that are crazy into it like I am, we tend to look at that kind of thing, and if that's not there, that's a missed opportunity. Especially like if they did G1 Prime and they decided to leave the stripes off the trailer. A lot of people would have flipped, you know? And that's kind of just a little bitty thing that we look at, because any other iteration of G2 Breakdown's always had this. This is the only one that's come out like that.
So maybe we can hope for Repro Labels to maybe remedy that along with the missing tampograph.
Yeah, well, that would be kind of cool if Repro Labels would actually come out with maybe like just like the G.I. Joe stickers and stuff like that, they're just translucent background that says Autobot or Decepticon with a little bitty thing. So that way you can properly put them somewhere on there. And it'd actually be really cool if they did that and actually give us the names, because they were going to have the names printed on them as well back then. And that's something that
you use a sticker that's worth a crap, not like like we said before with Roadbuster and World. As long as the sticker, the actual sticker, is decent, it doesn't peel or curl, and I would say you'd be fine with that. But that's one thing. Okay.
I was going to say, as far as the name thing, didn't they eventually do that later on in like Beast Wars and even the 95 run of G2?
Yes. They did. They eventually put the names on there. And honestly, I like the idea they put names on there, because it's like, you know, some kids, they'll have so many different Transformers, and they're trying to remember the name of that one. And that's something I really liked that they actually did in G2, is they slapped the names on them, you know, and that's actually a great idea.
It's a great idea, except that if you're a kid. Now, think about this. Think about this. First of all, you're going to be an Autobot or a Decepticon. You're going to transform into a vehicle that is the most god-awful color that's going to stick out in the crowd. And then to top it on off, you're going to put your damn name on there, and yet you're in disguise. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. That really does.
Yeah, but if you read the comics like I have, and they're very, very, very adamant on, they kicked the whole robot in disguise out the window, because –
It was around at that point. It was still robots in disguise, but the word disguise was in quotation marks.
Yes, I read the comics. I read the comics, and I don't remember them even talking about that.
They were bright, garish colors. They were trying to blend in with everything else in the 90s.
Well, true. That's very true. But, I mean, they didn't really have a lot of human interaction besides G.I. Joe, really, at all in the comics. So it wouldn't have mattered. They could have been all freaking like Goldran from Brave. How's that blend in with anything? You know, it's one of those things. But if you look at, okay, like say you had Star Saber land nowadays on an airport runway, people would flip out because they think it's a freaking starship from God knows where. But if you had Jetfire land, they'll think, oh, well, that looks more like a F-14 Tomcat. You see what I mean?
With a giant jetpack on his back.
Exactly. It's got like this freaking, well, I mean, when I was in the military, we had F-16 Falcons that are fighters. If you've seen the ones that they actually have external fuel tanks, but the fuel tanks run across the backbone and they're not hung underneath, it completely changes that aircraft's design. It looks so different. So that whole jetpack thing, there's an idea right there, because everybody will think, oh, well, that's just like a different mock-up of something, because there's so many different designs.
Dog, I heard you like jets, so we put jets on your jets so you can get one.
Exactly.
Well, there is one thing I wanted to say as far as tempos versus stickers. And I actually noticed it. Well, first of all, one of the things that happened to be right at the right time, I was still collecting a lot of the Japanese stuff, and I had just gotten into the MicroMaster combiners, like Six Liner, Six Train, and all that. And that was actually the first time when I had heard they were reissuing them. I was kind of nervous, you know, thinking the value of what I just bought and this, that, and the other. Well, when I got them, they had tempos on them. You know, the Autobot symbols on the vintage ones are stickers. Yep. Along with some of the there are details that are stickers also, whereas the reissue ones were tempos. So from and I hate being that guy, but I will be, from a collector point of view, I like the change. I like the fact that they went from one to the other, simply because now you can differentiate and you can retain some of the value, because they are different. So just a little side note.
Absolutely.
Well, that makes complete sense. I agree with you on that, Brett.
You know, I think it's time that we move on to our main topic of discussion here. And as we talked about at the top of the show, the Dinobots. Now, the Dinobots is, again, as we mentioned at the top of the show, they've gotten a lot of third-party love lately. I see them popping up in discussions a lot, especially on the forums and on Facebook. The popularity of the Dinobots, I think they probably could be the most, outside of maybe the Constructicons, maybe the most beloved subgroup in the Transformers fandom. I mean, that could be argued day and night, but just going by, you know, whenever people see a picture of the Dinobots, Grimlock especially, people just seem to swoon. I mean, they love them. And what's not to love from a child's standpoint? You got giant robots from outer space that turn into giant metal dinosaurs. That was just a win-win situation. While Jim inappropriately touches his G2 Grimlock while we're talking right now, it's Dawn.
There's more to this than meets the eye. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. People just love the Dinobots. Grimlock is
some people love them a lot more than others.
Yes, Jim. He especially loves the mouth opening gimmick on Grimlock.
with the teeth.
Yeah. Dawn just keeps stopping by.
Here we go.
In the chat. But you know, Grimlock, I think he's whenever you talk about tier one characters, Optimus Prime, Megatron, Soundwave, Starscream, Bumblebee, Grimlock, I think could easily be in there. He's the big T-Rex. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers Grimlock. Soundwave was the tape deck dude, and Grimlock was the T-Rex. Everybody remembers him. So the Dinobots have their fame. I think they got underused in Age of Extinction and misused, but that's my personal opinion. But I think it's a good opportunity now to just sit and look at the Dinobots as a group, talk about how they were perceived, and then look at each individual member, their popularity, and what appealed to us as fans from each particular character. Dawn, since you've gotten all your exhales out, what is your thought on the Dinobots as a whole, as a group?
Well, I'm a little biased because my very first Transformer was Sludge. I got him 1984, my 14th birthday, at a flea market. Guy had a whole table full of box Transformers, and I got him with my birthday money for $15. My mother said, "That thing costs $15?" And I said, "Yes, Mom, but it's a Brontosaurus, and it's a robot." So, again, I was a little trying to show off that it was an awesome combination, like, you know, peanut butter and chocolate. I love the Dinobots. I think from a third-party standpoint, they've gotten a lot of love. I'm hoping everybody has a scale or a design, whether you want, like Doran and I, like the Fans Toys Masterpiece level. No, Brett. Brett, someone closer than me hit him with a Rock Lord. In rock mode. I know better. Solitaire in jewel mode. She has sharp points. Or if you like the Shuriken, the combiners, because I'll be honest, I've always wanted a Dinobot combiner. You know, that's one reason I'm getting, the Fans Toys, is they don't combine, but they're the closest thing in my mind to what the Dinobot should look like. Or if you want the War for Cybertron design, which several people are doing. But I'm hoping after this current run of Dinobots, if everybody's found the one they want, we can try to move on to maybe some original Dinobots, like Paddles, I believe, is being done by one company.
Is it?
I believe so.
Know if they ever got any more.
And then we have a female Dinobot, a new character being done by one company, but I haven't seen anything except a gray prototype since the announcement on that one. But if they could do original Dinobots, that's fine. But I would like to see a lot of the third parties move on to the next thing. And hopefully it'll be like original Dinobots. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing the Ankylosaurus from Neo or 2. It's hard for me to remember which line had which figures, I'll be honest. That was a very complex figure for the size. But
yeah, you remember the name?
It was orangish red.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of tough to transform to.
Yeah.
And that's the one that they used for the Dinobot line.
Yeah. So, you know, in a masterpiece size where you, or at least, you know, in that range, apologize, long day at work, with a little more size, a little more mass to work with, that figure could be a treat versus a terrifying mismatch of. Mine was like Mach Kick. Mach Kick, you pull apart on each half, transform each half, and then stick it back together. That's kind of what I did on the Ankylosaurus figure. Just pick off parts and transform them and put them back on. But, you know, stuff like that I would like to see. But the Dinobots, I love them. We got some really fun stories with them. Season 3 really, really mistreated the Dinobots. I think that was a real downturn.
I'm glad that they wasn't omitted from Season 3, though.
Yeah, is that better or worse than being comic relief at best, or
they not were even the badasses, in robot mode? They were arguably the badasses of Season 2. And then in Season 3, like you said, they basically became the comic relief. But I think that was largely in part to their portrayal in the animated movie in 86, where they were kind of a mixture. They were badasses, but they were also funny, you know.
Plus also, you had new toys you were trying to sell. So yeah. those got the lion's share of screen time.
Major example, okay? Think back to, you know, Season 2. You have, you know, the introduction of the Dinobots, and Grimlock almost, you know, along with Snarl and Slag, I believe.
Sludge, Slag, and Grimlock were the original three.
I was thinking Sludge came with Swoop later on.
No.
Anyway, the three of them almost took out Optimus Prime. And then fast forward to, you know, the animated movie in 86, and, you know, Devastator hits Sludge, and Sludge's eyes pop out like something from a Tex Avery cartoon. And then by Season 3, Grimlock is almost perpetually stuck in dino mode, you know, as a T-Rex. Yeah. And he's going around with a serving tray and an apron.
Yeah.
Well, unless he's wearing a bedtime story.
Yeah, the only time I remember Grimlock in robot mode was in Madman's Paradise, when he's, like, atop the wall defending the castle.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I remember off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about that, yeah.
Well, but the thing is, though, is that even though they were more of a comic relief in Season 3, they got a lot of screen time, quite frankly, especially Grimlock. I mean, he was like one of the central characters of Season 3. I know.
I think Call Swoop of the Primitives didn't get much at all.
Yeah, Call of the Primitives got Grimlock was like the central character, arguably. I mean, he was the one that saved the day. Grimlock's new brain, you know. I mean, he created the Technobots. You know, go figure. That was, and I think that has a large part of why Jim likes the Dinobots, is because, you know, Grimlock created his beloved Technobots. Isn't that right, Jim?
Well, there's actually a few reasons. You know, one of which, probably one of the biggest ones, is growing up, Grimlock was my older brother's favorite character aside from Jetfire. And, you know, later on, you know, I got into, you know, some of the combiners and things that him and some friends were messing with. And I, you know, being the little brother, I always had to go in and play with him too. But, you know, I saw the Computron combiner and it blew my mind. I didn't find out till years later that, you know, once I, you know, got the Sci-Fi Channel airing of, you know, G1, that Grimlock had created that Technobot team. And so, you know, I just always thought it was kind of a neat connection. But yeah, I've actually I actually don't think there's been any other really instances of like a lineage of Transformers. Aside from that, I mean, at least not that major with that many characters, because you start out, you've got Ratchet and Wheeljack as Grandpa and Grandma. Then you've got, you know, Grimlock as Daddy. And then you've got Scattershot and the Technobots as Grandkid.
Okay, your fan fiction sounds wonderful, Jim.
Not fan fiction, just overanalyzation.
Hey, Don, you still want to throw that rock at me?
Maybe I can get some spin on it, and it'll bounce off of you and hit Jim. So maybe I'll throw some spin on it.
So what about you, Brett? What is your view on the Dinobots as a group?
I like the first time we saw them, made specifically to go against Devastator, and I loved it. I loved it. They were stronger, and I know that they touched on their limited intelligence, which, you know, right then and there you could see how it, you know, trailed down to where they were comic relief based upon their intelligence. But I always liked Sludge. In my opinion, and honestly, I cannot remember what the tech spec said, but I always envisioned Sludge to be the strongest one. Bigger, better, stronger.
But actually, subservient. I think one of the many write-ups, like it might have been the Dreamwave version of the More Than Meets the Eye guide, I believe they said in dinosaur mode he is the strongest of the Dinobots.
Yeah.
See, I thought that was Sludge.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's Sludge.
Sludge, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Okay. I said what I liked, what I always did, I always thought, you know, you had Grimlock was the leader, Sludge was the strongest, and then Slag, I always never really had much to do with him because I always felt that Snarl was more of the kind of like the Ironhide. He was the weapons specialist, and then you had Swoop was the aerial. And that was my team, and that's how I felt that they should, you know, when they went to attack, in my eyes, of course, was always Devastator, and that's how they did it. I thought it was really neat when they first did him. Like you said, three of them against Prime, they almost defeated him. Mm-hmm. And it was really neat when they said, well, we're going to, you know, we like the Dinobots, we're going to make, you know, a couple more. And then, boom, we get Swoop.
Yeah, and Snarl. Right. Heavy Metal War was the VHS.
War of the Dinobots.
War of the Dinobots,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. War of the Dinobots. Heavy Metal War was the Constructicon one.
Right. You know, and I think if I remember correctly, they made Slag out to be the flamethrower. Mm-hmm. I think that's how they did him.
That's his function, actually.
Right. So that's what they were. But also remember, you know, as a kid, robots, Transformers, you know, dinosaurs. Why not bring them in? You know, it's a way of bringing in.
I distinctly remember back in the 80s seeing the Dinobots on shelves. They were always very popular. I mean, they seemed to fly off the shelves rather quickly. I know for me, it seemed like Slag and Swoop were always the two hardest to find for me.
I don't think I ever saw a Swoop on the shelves, ever. I don't think I ever did. I remember Grimlock. If I had to guess, if they did case assortments, I'd be willing to bet that Grimlock was over, you know, packed more. Mm-hmm. And that's probably due to the popularity of the show and everything. But still,
well, you know what? I bet John and Carl at one point had the case assortment on one of their websites. I wouldn't even know where to begin looking for it now, but
right. I just remember, like you said, I remember not being able to find Swoop.
Well, who was your first?
It's funny because he's actually one of the hardest ones to complete, and it's mostly because he breaks so easy. Yeah. But he's the hardest one out of all the five, and he's more than likely he would be the one that's going to cost you the most to get a nice G1 is Swoop.
Yeah. Who was your first Dinobot?
Oh God. Slag. Slag was. Yep. I remember that.
I know Don said his was Sludge. Mine was my very first boxed Transformer ever was Snarl.
Well, no, my literal very first Transformer ever was Sludge.
Literally. It's the one that started it all.
Huh? Well, see, exactly. I can definitely remember that Slag was my first Dinobot because I remember all the glue when I broke it. I broke the wings on it, you know, the back pieces. The first thing I broke was the tail. That thing was so glued, he was stiff as could be. Couldn't transform after I got done with it. I still remember that. Slag was my first.
Because I remember I got Sludge, Beachcomber, Top Spin, and Warpath that weekend. And then after that, it's a blur. I have no idea what I... After that, it all runs together.
Jim, you said yours was G2 Grimlock, right?
Yes, sir. Right here.
Did you ever complete all 5 Dinobots?
Never did. Came close a couple times, but never did.
Well, what about you, Plasticone? What do you think of the Dinobots as a group, and who was your first?
As a group, I think they were tremendously awesome. I was always a big fan of dinosaurs when I was a kid. I read books because I always wanted to be a paleontologist, so it really appealed to me. Grimlock was my first one, but Slag is actually my favorite because I absolutely love the Triceratops. I did like his goofiness. That's what I like really about him. Exactly. He's just funny.
One of the best lines from the movie.
Right, and honestly, I found his transformation to be a little easier than Grimlock's at times. So, I don't know, I like the two together. It was really, really fun because, you know, back in the day, you'd watch those old Ray Harryhausen movies and stuff like that, and you'd see the Triceratops and the T-Rex, and they'd bite each other and stuff like that. And obviously, as kids, we used to do stuff like that all the time. But I always thought it was cool, and later on, when I found out about them being, you know, more of the Diaclone kind of thing, the thing that really appealed to me was, the commercial that came out with it. It showed them, biting these, little bitty plastic dinosaurs with the freaking, teeth and stuff like that. And it's like, you would probably break the jaw of freaking Grimlock trying to do that kind of stuff. So it's just really, really cool. I always thought it was interesting that they showed that flamethrower portion came out of Grimlock's mouth instead of, Slag or any of the other ones. Slag is probably my favorite. I kind of wished back then that they made it so that way his horns fired like missiles. That's something I always wished they would have done.
they could have done in Mazinger Z, and the horns could have been the missiles.
Exactly. That would have been cool. I would have loved that if that was a little added feature they did, because I've always loved the Triceratops because to me he was always the big bulldozing brute. But later on, you know, when they came out in G2, I really loved the idea that they made him in two different other colors. So it's this is freaking cool that they get this guy in so many different colors now. I'm just a big fan of Triceratops.
You wanted Slag to have horny missiles, huh?
Exactly. Why not?
Yeah.
Everybody likes things that are horny, right?
Yeah. It's sort of weird that of all the Dinobots, Slag and Swoop kind of flip back and forth on my least favorite. I guess Swoop because he just would never stand up. No matter unless you shrink the legs down, he always just would never stand up on the shelf. And something about Slag always just, I think it was the tiny little fists. Just teeny tiny little fists, and you know, they flip back and forth as far as my least favorite depending on the time and day someone asks me. But you know, I love what they've done. Again, I think it was because the size of the figures. Now that we're giving fans toys masterpiece ones, when you've got more mass to work with, a lot of the aesthetics that probably I didn't like but couldn't understand at the time are rectified. But you know, I'm tempted by the G2, you know, the G2, the fans toys G2 colors. I just can't really justify double dipping on MP Dinobots.
Yeah, those things are expensive. I'm glad I'm done with them. I may get Grinder depending on how good he is, but yeah, they are so expensive, but they're so worth it. I'll add that as a caveat. They are worth it. They're worth every penny. I mean, look how freaking big Sludge is, or Stomp is in Dino mode. I mean, it's as big as my freaking head. You know, I'm a big guy, so. But, you know, I'm kind of with you there, Don. You know, Slag, I didn't like the G1 Slag toy because he was nice in Dino mode. Yeah, and Slag is British slang for slut. It's kind of funny.
I thought it was the other S word.
I was just going to leave it there, all right? Yeah.
No, it's Slag is, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong for those in the UK, but I believe it's a British slang term for a prostitute or a whore.
Please advise us if we're using the slang correctly.
Okay? Yeah, but yeah, Slag, I didn't like the Slag toy per se because the way that the dino tail kind of like folds up and it just kind of hangs up in the in the back there. I mean, it really didn't store right away all that well. And to get it to stand properly, you kind of lay it down so he kind of like a tripod with his tail, you know.
Yeah.
and Brett just can't contain himself with all the with all the
That'll be TFYLP after dark on that one.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned that she has a tail that's hanging down.
Yeah, but but you know, I'll be honest though. If they the one G2 figure, because I've got this, I had the Slag at one point, but I must have sold him because I can't find him. And I've got the Snarl, but I never got the G2 Grimlock. I saw one that was like a as Jim probably knows, the blue G2 Grimlocks had an absolutely incredible variance on colors. I mean, there was just a wide range of colors.
Turquoise. Turquoise blue and silver.
Yeah, and I saw one, and I know this for a fact, that was basically Carolina blue, powder puff Carolina blue. And
yeah, that's the one they call turquoise.
And I didn't get it at the time. I don't know why. I was stupid, I guess. But I would love to get a Fans Toys. You know, if they do their the rest of the G2 colors, either the prototypes like what
I want the Tiger Stripe Grimlock.
Yeah, I would probably buy the grinder in the G2 colors just to have the mold, but it'd be like a G2 Powder Puff Blue Grimlock, sort of like a double homage there.
I don't know. I still think it'd be awesome to see the Tiger Stripe.
Mm-hmm.
That Tiger Stripe is just freaking cool. I really think that they dropped the ball in G2 by not giving us a Grimlock like that.
I believe it was Get Right Robot that actually did a custom masterpiece Grimlock with the in the Tiger Stripe.
It was phenomenal. On eBay, like I think it was probably about maybe 6 months ago or so, I saw one on eBay. I forget what it was going for, but I don't know if that's the same one that's floating around or if that's a different one, because I've seen several different pictures of that one. To be honest, I'm sorry. It's a missed opportunity that they didn't take the masterpiece Grimlock and make the silly thing blue. They could have easily turned it back around and sold just as many. I've seen a lot of customs of it.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you really think they don't have the molds? Of course they do. They could still
got the molds. They
here's the problem. They've done so many. They just need to give it a break.
But I mean, look at the UK version of the Grimlock, or the comic version. You know. Oh my God.
That's the Tiger Stripe.
Our friend the Maz. This is his picture of it. And yeah,
I have never seen this before. As far as this custom, my God, that is so hideously glorious. I want one.
Okay, check this out. I've got the other one here.
The robot mode?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly why I want this. It's such a missed opportunity.
Oh, that is so...
Honestly, those of you who are listening, I'm sorry, Jace. For those of you who are listening and trying to picture what we're looking at, it is the masterpiece Grimlock in a, what would you say, a dandelion yellow with a powder blue tiger stripes on the dino mode. Okay. And then in robot mode, he's got a powder blue chest with a powder blue head and claws.
Probably, as far as a real world color, if you've ever seen a box of Bisquick, the yellow boxes of Bisquick, it's that color yellow. If you're in a store, see a box of Bisquick, imagine Grimlock, the I want this. Someone please make this.
I'm getting a Toxitron vibe from this.
Yeah, kind of. The thing to me, honestly, if this was actually to come out as a real toy, I would like to see all that powder blue be chrome.
Mm-hmm.
Be
no,
chrome blue in that color.
No, no.
And that would really, I think it would make it pop. Well, it's a 90s thing.
Well,
a lot of bling. And that would.
I think the chrome, now this is my opinion, Plasticon. I think the chrome would push it a little past G2 into
including
too much.
The turquoise one.
You know, now, if maybe, say the teeth, if maybe if the teeth were, the dinosaur teeth were chromed, I think that would be enough chrome just to get a different look. But not the chest, because I think that would be just too much.
I don't know. I mean, it's like a – and here's a mock-up. Mm-hmm. And I actually have a friend of mine that is going to be possibly sending me a custom G2 Grimlock that is blue, similar to this.
Yeah.
And it's just – I mean, look at it. I mean, it's such a missed opportunity. It'd be an easy recolor that they can just slap out there on the market, and there would be a lot of people that buy it.
You know, well, Brett's right as far as the Dinobots needing a rest. And like I said earlier, I'm hoping some of these companies, once their Dinobots are done, if they're not going to make original Dinobots to go in with the other characters to sort of give the Dinobots a rest and let some ideas, you know, some new ideas come through. But I would love to see all the companies at some point come back to these G2 colors so everybody can get. But the problem is with G2, and I've mentioned this before, if you didn't grow up with G2 as it was happening, the innovations, the colors, the entire entity of G2, as it's being released, as you're seeing it on the shelves for the first time, is something that you don't forget because it was so wildly different and there was so much innovation from a technology-wise, not just the colors, because people just think G2 is crazy colors. No, there's ball and socket joints, there's pressure point missiles, there's, you know, a lot of technological innovations we're still using today. But if you're a younger fan looking back at it, the impact is not there because you've got all the technology in newer toys. You don't really care where it came from, and all you're seeing is these really crazy colors. But I still think there's a market for these G2 Dinobots. Someone just has to, you know, do it when the time is right and we're not suffering from dino fatigue.
I agree with you on that. I completely do. But the problem is if they just take these molds and stick them in a shelf and not touch them for several years and try to come back to those molds, it costs so much money to restore those molds to even use them to turn back around and reproduce.
We're not saying wait years,
yeah.
You know. Just get a couple other things that people have been clamoring for, you know, like, you know, Jazz, and just, you know, get a couple of things out there that people want, Jazz, and then get back to it.
Yeah.
G2, you know, Jazz.
Jazz.
I want a music label, Jazz.
You know, looking at the images of that, Bisquick Grimlock there.
I coined the name Bisquick. He's now Bisquick Grimlock. I get credit for that.
That works. I second that motion. But no, looking at that, it reminded me, there's a member of, a distant member of the Dinobot team that we've pretty well overlooked, and I would think that it would be a welcome addition into the team would be Dinobot, mm-hmm. Beast Wars Dinobot, and that Bisquick color scheme kind of reminds me of that to an extent.
Well, the tiger stripes do.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, Bisquick yellow, weird tan, it's not too far of a stretch. But anyway, I think that would be a fun character to bring back and even add into the existing, you know, Grimlock crew as just yet another member.
You know, the
question is how big would he be? Because he's a velociraptor, and velociraptors would be much smaller than any of the other dinosaurs.
Still a dinosaur. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you were to bring him in to, like, Masterpiece scale, he would still be a lot smaller. Right. I think it would be actually a really cool thing, especially how many, like, color iterations
how about this? Okay, with the Combiner Wars Skylinks, and then later on in Titans Return, we're starting to see more Beast characters introduced. And we know that there's a Trypticon way down the pipeline. Maybe something they could do would be to give us some kind of updated Dinobots, because they've been noticeably absent from anything since Age of Extinction, almost 3 years ago.
And in a bit of Dinobot inception here, if we got a Masterpiece Dinobot, he could be recolored into Dalmatian Grimlock.
There you go.
Maybe
we could get a Dinobot Combiner out of Combiner Wars.
Maybe.
But now let's we've kind of dealt a little bit on the Dinobots as a whole. Let's look at some of the other Dinobots specifically. Let's start with the initial three. And, you know, since he's my favorite Dinobot and I'm the host, I'm going to choose him. Sludge. Let's talk about Sludge as a character. Now, here's the G1 toy. And this is something I don't think we really touched on either a whole lot, was the Diaclone driver hatch. I remember as a kid, I didn't know about the Diaclone stuff, so I always wondered why they had like a little cockpit, a little seat inside the chest of each Dinobot. And
it's where you put the missiles.
Yeah, that's where I did. I'd stick the missiles in there.
It's for the caveman to drive.
But
another
reason why I want to highlight Sludge is that in recent years, it seems like Sludge is the forgotten Dinobot. And I have a theory on why. And that's because Sludge was the one Dinobot that was essentially, he was, a brontosaurus back in the day. And those of you who are paleontology aficionados, kind of like Plasticon and myself, the brontosaurus was later found to actually be misidentified and was not a real dinosaur. Now, it is a sauropod, a apatosaur, which, you know, there's Diplodocus, the brachiosaurs. So he does have that form factor. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
a lot of big words.
You know, he was the big hulking brute of the group. And it seems like lately, throughout Armada and Energon, whenever we were getting those little Dinobot sets, we would get classics, we got classics Grimlock and everything. It just seemed like Sludge was always the forgotten one. And it is really sad. There's one other one that's forgotten more than any of them because he never even got a toy. We'll talk about him a little bit later too. But Sludge, he always endeared to me because his character in the cartoon, he was easily the dumbest of the Dinobots. He could arguably be the dumbest. His cognitive skills were slow. He only followed the strongest leader, always. but you know, he was just the big lovable brute. I'm a big fan of the brontosaur type, dinosaur. He's just awesome. What do you guys think about Sludge, Don?
Well, he, nostalgia glasses here because he was my first Dinobot I got. I just love him because it's a simple transformation, but it's not so complex. Well, again, a lot of the G1s weren't complex, but it's just fun. He sort of turns inside out. He's got a nice profile. He doesn't, and with his wide foot base, he's easy to pose and stand. Plus, you could go stomp, 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 because he had the big feet that you could stomp with. I don't know. It's just you know, he, again, with him being my first Transformer ever, I just love him. He just looks good. He's fun to transform. I just like him, you know. He's my he's probably my favorite. He's my him and Snarl, just so close to each other. It's just because I love Stegosaurus. So, you know, Snarl is so close to be like just that close.
Well, what about you, Plasticon? What do you think about Sludge?
I like Sludge. I always have. I was such a fan of the Brontosaurus, and then got a little upset when I found that it wasn't a real dinosaur.
Well,
it's still in my mind. I still think they're actually real.
Well, now they have said recently that it looks like, due to the evolution pattern of that family of dinosaurs, there is I'm not a paleontologist, so I'm sure I may get corrected, but apparently there's enough difference in the evolutionary steps between the step below and the step above where you can call them Brontosaurus again, because there's enough difference between the rest of the family. So he's on the edge, but apparently he is a actual real dinosaur again.
So what if it does exist?
I've always liked him. I always thought he was cool. To me, I just kind of wished he was a little bigger, because Grimlock was always taller, but if you read any of the books and stuff like that, the Brontosaurus always supposed to have been, slightly taller than a T-Rex.
Again, this is the reason why I like the Bantamweight
guy. It's just, he's huge. I mean, he's just a big freaking brute. It's like, to me, it's like if you had if Sludge was like a real, if it was like a real robotic dinosaur of his size to like walk down a freaking city street, he would just be walking around wagging his tail as buildings are just freaking collapsing, just like a freaking Godzilla movie. I mean, that's what I always liked about him. I just always thought he was just kind of a funny – he kind of reminds me of Bulkhead a little bit,
As people can see, if you're watching the video, the Fans Toys Stomp, he is easily the largest of the group. His box is even bigger than the other guys. And in in robot mode, he's actually a lot larger than the other guys too. He's about a good head taller than most of the other guys.
Sorry, I've got an angry Massey off camera, and I'm trying to appease him before he gets the crazies.
But yeah, as I'm G2 Sludge in my hands, I've always been a fan of just the transformation of the toy. When it comes to doing customs and stuff like that, you tend to learn a little bit more about the engineering and stuff, but actually, he would have been really, really nice if they actually did release him in that burnt orange color that they were going to get of him in G2. I mean, he would have really been kind of an eye-popping kind of thing on a shelf. I don't know. I'm sad to see that he didn't actually make it. But I still think, he's awesome. The engineering was great. I love the toy itself, but still can't get over the fact of thinking about a Brontosaurus walking down the street, whacking down buildings with his big old tail. So it's going to be funny.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to share. This was shown last week on the episode. You guys were talking about unreleased toys, and this is the G2 Sludge box art. It's kind of like a burnt orange, maybe a really dark tangerine with a blue chest. There's some toy pictures here.
Yeah, that one, that's kind of what I based to some of the stuff I did. I don't think it would have been quite that bright. He would have been a little bit more dull, but it's kind of hard to tell because a lot of folks don't understand when it comes to green, blue, and red or any hue of that. It's very difficult to actually photograph it where it's actually that true color.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird. With 4th of July coming up, one of the third-party companies could have released their sludge in those colors, and it'd be like a special 4th of July with all the red and blue on them. They could add some white highlights. It's like, 4th of July, patriotic sludge.
It's patriotic sludge for the win. And give him like a firecracker gun or something.
Or Captain America's shield, just for the complete,
So funny. So, yeah. G2 Jim, what do you think about Sludge?
Well, honestly, I think it was one of my favorite Dinobot figures that I've had over the years. Although I was wondering, as you had the one image pulled up there of him in Dino Brontosaurus mode, had some stickers on the tail. I always thought were supposed to be the eyes. It's like the hexagonal ones that have like the half black and half red. I always thought those were supposed to be eyes. But anyway, one of the better figures, I think, and it had elbows as a result of the way the arms transform. And I don't recall if any of the other Dinobots had that feature. So that was a nice bit of extra articulation that G1 did typically have. That and the massive feet. So, you know, he could go, you know, stomp, 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 as Dalton said, bouncing along like Tigger.
Oh, now I'm imagining Sludge in a Tigger pattern.
You're welcome.
As he's walking down the street, whacking all down all the buildings.
he already would have been orange. Just throw some stripes on the back and have him just bounce along. It would work.
Singing a tune.
It makes sense. Well, why not? I mean, the character's dumb enough to lose an argument with himself, so, you know, might as well. But I did, though. I enjoyed the figure thoroughly. That was actually one of the first Dinobots that I got years later once I started collecting. Because as a kid, I had only ever had Generation 2 Grimlock. That was my only Dinobot I ever had. So, you know, getting all these others, you know, in my later years was kind of a neat experience. And that's one I think I enjoyed the most.
What about you, Brett?
Well, the one thing I was going to say he already did is I liked the extra articulation. I actually did. I always thought it was neat that you could actually pose him with that big gun, kind of, and he'd be like holding it with both hands.
Yeah, which, the most poseable Dinobot. Yeah.
Which the others couldn't, and I always liked that. But like I said before, I always envisioned him as being the strongest, and he was my, like the brute enforcer. You know, if Grimlock couldn't handle it, he said, yeah.
You just don't see this kind of poseability in G1s. I mean,
right. He is the brute squad.
That's true. He is the brute squad. So, but yeah, that was the main thing I liked about him. The other thing was, I think it wasn't until I started collecting getting back into collecting after Beast Wars that I actually got Snarl and Swoop. I might have had a Snarl, but I know I never had a Swoop all the way up to when I actually got back into collecting in the 90s. So I never had one growing up. Like I said, I never found one. So had I gotten him when I was younger, he probably would have been my favorite because I just love the overall look. It looked like a solid figure, and you know, there was no gaps and he didn't have big feet, you know, just aesthetically he looked good. And to me, that was really important. I mean, it looked as close to the cartoon more so than any of the other Dinobots, in my opinion.
With the, Swoop?
Swoop.
Yeah. With the exception of the face mask on the robot mode, that's the only thing that bothered me.
But I just looked at the overall, you know, the design, and it looked really good. And plus with the fact that when I got back into collecting, he was so hard to find. It was like one of my holy grails when I finally got it. It just, you know, he rose above the others because I finally acquired it.
Yeah. So since we've kind of gravitated to Swoop, let's make him the next Dinobot we highlight. My biggest complaint were two things with Swoop. The chrome could wear really easily, and I'd say it's probably one of the most the biggest problems with the toy is you find the black scuffs and wear on the wings, and then the second one is the clear beak tends to break a lot.
And as of recently, I found that the lower jaw also, and this is a time thing. The beak over time gets a little bit of yellowing and becomes a little brittle, and it breaks easy. but I also found that some of the lower beaks, if the press pin has been pressed too tightly, and you go to move it, it will actually snap the back of it and actually come off. So both the upper and the lower are, you know, just little, and I've seen the neck break too, just from the lack of them not spreading the chest wide enough to drop it down and push down too hard, and it'll snap. So overall, even though I love the design, it's a very flawed design.
Very easy. Well, it's a very fragile design. Yeah.
Yes.
Plasticon, what about South Florida Swoop? I know we talked a little bit about that at the top of the show. We're in the pre-show. Tell us a little bit about your G2 Swoop love.
My G2 Swoop love. I honestly like the engineering behind Swoop. I've always loved the idea that, like, his chest splits open so that way, you know, the beak and the whole portion could fold down into the chest part on the G1. And yeah, I've seen a lot of swoops with beaks broken. I mean, that's the reason why he is the hardest and most expensive to find out there. I know a lot of people don't like alternatives and going down a knockoff route, but honestly, to find a knockoff version of G1 swoop is very difficult to find at all. And normally if you do find them, they're very pricey, and because that's the reason. I do like the idea that the G2 swoop, though, the colors are completely different. He's got a lot of turquoise blue and a really, really awesome green, as I'm trying to transform him here real carefully because I don't want to break his beak. But if you could find like a better picture for folks to actually see the other, like the actual box art to this guy. If any of you guys actually had the Legacy book, you would actually see this in there. I don't know if any of you guys out there have it. If you do, you'll see him in there. If you don't, I kind of suggest you actually get that book. It's a great book. But he's actually not too bad. It's really interesting how the colors on the toy I've actually done, it's very difficult to tell on my camera right now, but I mean, you can tell that he would have been like a really, really, really neon green that would glow literally in any black light. But him actually being in pterodactyl mode, it actually looks more like a dinosaur probably would have, because it's, you know, green and it's got kind of a bluish color, and while most dinosaurs were depicted to actually be a, you know, more of a green. Nice sexy women there, you know.
I'm trying to figure out why in the hell this came up in the swoop thing, but chick swoop. Okay,
hey, she's swooping all right.
Yeah.
This looks like, which toy is that has been repainted?
That is the Fans Toy Soar.
That's actually a toy that's coming out that's in those colors.
No, it's already out. It's been out for a while.
It's just not in those colors. That's a custom by, looks like Unexpected Panda. Oh, no, it's a Digibash is what it is.
It's a Digibash, yeah. To be honest, that would actually work very well because that's almost spot on to what the box art looks like.
That would probably get me to buy a second of that mold.
But, yeah, I mean, the thing is, he wouldn't have had chrome. They would have gotten rid of all the chrome, you know, and honestly, chrome was a big factor with some things. And I mean, I wouldn't have seen them give him like a chrome chest, honestly, but there were chrome pieces on the other Dinobots, so there's really no telling. And the cool thing I like about Swoop is the fact that even if you have him in dinosaur mode, you can actually set him on a shelf and he looks like he's perching. Even the G1 could do that,
yeah.
Which is actually kind of cool compared to the rest of the dinosaurs. You know, he did have a double function mode where you can just put him in aerial mode or put him in kind of a perched mode. And he looks really, really good with the rest of the G2. I think he probably would have came out in a wave along with Sludge, probably being part of the wave where we got the Grimlock and the crazy tiger stripe color, and I wouldn't have been surprised if it would have been with the green Snarl and the red Slag. he probably was going to be part of that line, and they just cut the entire idea.
I have to say, I'm never going to be able to unsee that now. But what you mentioned about Swoop looking like he's perched, mm-hmm. when you said that, it was showing the robot mode of G1 Swoop, and all I could see was him not having robot legs, but instead him being perched on top of a set of robot legs.
I think he looks really cool. I mean,
it's just hilarious to me now. Is now he's got long arms and itty bitty, you know, pterodactyl legs.
Yeah.
Here's something that I'm just thinking of. Imagine a G2 Dinobot group shot with everything we've seen so far. Oh my God, the blinding wonderfulness of such a set.
It would look like a bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
That's pretty much what my shelf looks like
on
right
fire.
Now.
Fire. Hey, if the Fruity Pebbles were on fire, yeah.
Well, myself, I haven't gotten hold of another Grimlock. I'm trying to get hold of maybe like just a rough G1 Grimlock that I can repaint into that tiger stripe. So that way I can actually have that full ensemble sitting on the shelf. It's literally the only one that I don't have that one, and I need to get the green Snarl, which is so difficult to find out there. It's just not even funny.
So
Brett knows how expensive that thing is and how hard it is to even find one.
Don, what do you think of Swoop?
Again, like I said, him and Slag sort of flip-flop back and forth as my bottom two. Just because Swoop, you could never pose him. Unless you collapse the legs down and he was make him super short, he always fell forward, fell backwards, fell off.
That's where you perch him.
Yeah, well, there's that. But honestly, he actually had a lot of screen time, especially in the two-parter Desertion of the Dinobots. When he was on Cybertron with Carly and Spike.
Dinobot Island Part 1 and 2.
Yeah,
true. Some in there, too.
So, I mean, he actually got a lot more characterization than some of them. It's just, I don't know. It's just, the toy just kind of made me jaded as far as you really couldn't do much with it other than just, like, if he's on a shelf in robot mode, you kind of put the wing up against another figure who is kind of holding him up, but it didn't look like it. But yeah, I like him. He's fine. He looks good in both modes. It's just not a very fun toy to put on a
shelf. Out of all the Dinobots, I found Swoop to probably be the least complicated one as well. Yeah. I mean, he just seemed like his transformation consisted of flop his shins around off of the dinosaur back, flip around the feet, spread the chest apart, flop down the beak, put the head back, and swing down the arms, and there you go.
And the bad part was if that chest slider ever gets rusty or stuck, trying to pry that thing apart is going to scare you half to death because sometimes it just will not. On my G1 Swoop, I have actually had to take a butter knife and wiggle it in between the chest pieces just trying to break it free enough to slide open. Because it just – maybe it's slightly bent with age or it's a little rusty in there on the sliders or something. I don't know. But it's just like – it just doesn't – that just not does not want to open wide enough without risk – you know, you're just sort of waiting to – it's like that old G1 commercial with Soundwave when the kid transforms him and he brings the legs down and you expect the legs to snap and Soundwave go flying in three different directions. That's kind of what I'm waiting for Swoop is me to open the chest up, and it just goes right down the middle, snap.
Well, normally what you can do, just a little bit of advice for anybody out there who has G1 Swoop, you can slightly loosen the screws that are on the back. Not a lot, but a little bit. Considering those screws are going directly into diecast, they're actually a little easier to deal with versus them going straight into plastic. And normally it's got these little plastic grommets that go around the screws. Now, I've seen them where a lot of people out there try to sell them, and then you look on the back, and that entire plastic grommet's missing. It's gone because it just breaks and cracks and falls in half or whatever. And that's sometimes the issue, Don, why some of these don't like to open correctly, because that plastic grommet over time wears away, and sometimes it just breaks. So it's something you actually have to be aware of. But like I said, I mean, if you are a Transformer collector, try to invest in maybe a set of precision screwdrivers, because every now and then you do have to loosen a screw here or there in order to move a part, especially with like Swoop. Swoop's the most delicate Transformer, I think, in the entire G1 universe, honestly, besides GPS stuff. It is literally the most delicate. I know Roadbuster's up there, but he is literally the most delicate.
Now, let's move on to Snarl. And incidentally, I'm going to talk about it. You know, I spoke about him a while ago as my first G1, my box G1. Oops.
Well, he was.
No, that was a package. That was a package I dropped.
His box. It just went off the shelf.
That was a package I dropped. Now, you know, I've still got my original Snarl. He's one of my very few G1s that I have from my childhood. He's seen better days. Still complete. I got his sword and his guns and his missile launchers up in the case. But I was actually in a store yesterday here in Kentucky, and I come across a boxed G1 Snarl. And for those of you who can see it, nice and pristine, nice and shiny. And here's one of the better parts. Stickers are unapplied, and the weapons and stuff are still in there. Really, really nice. He has a lot of sentimental value to me because he was my very first boxed Transformer ever. He just looks awesome. I mean, he's got all the gold chrome. I've got the Fan Toys version here. Look how blingy he is. I mean, just so shiny. I think he's one of the prettiest of the Dinobots, in my opinion. He's not my favorite, but he's one of the prettiest ones. And I mean, just for all the chrome that he has. In the cartoon, especially in the 86 movie, he was like, what, one scene? As they were panning, talking about this new menace, whenever Ultra Magnus was talking about this new menace, they were panning to the left, and you see Snarl for a brief moment, and that was his only appearance in the entire 86 movie. But yet we saw him afterwards in season 3. But he didn't really get a whole lot of characterization beyond season 2. And that's a real shame. He was actually kind of neat, voiced by I believe it was Hal Rail that voiced him in the cartoon. What do you guys think of Snarl, Brett?
Well, I was going to share that image real quick, but there it is. You briefly see him next to Grimlock.
Let me highlight your screen here. Can you click on the view image over there and bring it up a little bit bigger?
Oh,
it's a thumbnail.
Yeah, over on the right.
That's as big as it gets.
Oh, that's as big as it gets?
Yeah, I don't
think that's what she said.
20 by 166.
That one. No, there it is. Anyway, the only thing I didn't like, I don't like him as a toy. And the main reason is no matter, unless you got one as mint as that one, the floppy face that just never stayed together.
Well, that's one of the problems with my vintage original right here. And
that's a common problem with all of them. They just, they don't, just like, because of that little tab, it's a little peg right over there.
Yeah, but if the thing is if you're holding it to the side, you know, you can kind of pretend this. I did this as a kid. I pretended he could look left, and then you go over here, he could look right. You know, but
poor Snarl has a splitting headache.
Yes,
I like some of his functions in the cartoon. You know, that he had with the spikes, and they would glow and shoot, and I thought all that was neat. But honestly, as a character, he just really didn't do anything.
Well, there was very little characterization beyond a couple episodes in season two.
Yeah,
and it's a crying shame
really
because
didn't develop him at all. I mean, it's you hate to say it, but he was just there to sell the toy.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. There, he's on TV or he's on the TV. You got to buy him now. He didn't do anything, but you got to buy him now. And that was it.
Yeah. And there he is there in robot form.
Now, the robot, in robot mode like that, I think the front view, as far as the toy goes, looks really good. I like it.
Yeah. I don't like the little pea head. I don't like the little pea head. That's a little bit.
That didn't bother me so much. But then you turn him, you know, sideways, and he had one good view. You know, he to get me from my good side. That's it. I didn't like the rest. So.
Yeah. He's got a nice head sculpt too. Plasticon, what do you think of Snarl?
I like Snarl. I don't know. I guess it's because I like the armored dinosaurs. I like the idea that they picked him out as a Stegosaurus. And the G2 color variations of red and green really do a little more for that toy, honestly, I thought, compared to what the G1 did. For some reason, they just stick out better. Obviously, really very, very little characterization whatsoever, but a lot of kids growing up during the 80s loved, like the Triceratops or maybe a Stegosaurus or something because he's all spiky and everything, and that's something I really liked about him. I don't like the idea that the face doesn't like to close, and most of the time that's due to the pins and all that. And the tail portion on that one as well. Need to watch out because there's a little bitty chrome bit that sticks out and that actually is supposed to peg together, and most of the time those break off too.
Yep, the inside gray pieces.
Right, yeah, and
they're notorious for breaking.
That is the only flaw on this one is one of the little clear pieces right there is broke off.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the feet. Yeah, the feet also. Yeah.
Right, but, and those are spring loaded, so those little tabs will wear quicker.
Right,
because it's preloaded.
If you ever get if you get hold of one that is like mint, obviously you probably aren't gonna do anything to it. But if you get one that's like maybe slightly used and those legs don't like to pop open very well, I kind of suggest doing a little bit of cleaning in there. And if you do need to do a slight filing, you can probably do it on the actual gray part. Than the clear part. I wouldn't do the clear part because the clear part is translucent plastic. A lot of that likes to break over time. So I would take away from more of the meatier type of plastic if you had to do anything to that. There are ways to modify to be able to make the tail and the head to actually stick together better. And most of the time that requires replacing the pin, that actually the little post that is supposed to click together with. Sometimes you have to completely replace it because most of the time they're just broke off. But the toy itself, honestly, I never really disliked it. I actually liked it. That was a good toy. I kind of am on the same side with Ron with his head. I always thought it was a little too small. But the waist part, I think, is probably one of the things that really irritates anybody because it's
floppy.
It's very floppy, and it's very difficult to fix. That's probably, I would say, that's more of a downfall of the toy than the head split, to be honest.
So what you're saying is, aside from the clips on the arms, the waist, the clips on the tail, the small head, the looseness or the tightness of the legs, it's not a bad toy, right?
Okay. It's a lot better than most of the toys I messed with.
Visually, it's a nice
visually,
toy.
It looks good.
I'm sitting here thinking, as you guys are going through this, I'm thinking, this thing's a piece of garbage. I mean, every single bit of it's got something wrong. Out of all of it.
Honestly, it just depends on the age of it, honestly. Because I've handled some that are almost pristine and not really had all that issue. But I've been like you and also got one in a bin one time, and you're looking around and it's missing the entire translucent part. My freaking arm's completely gone and stuff like that. And it's a big floppy mess. It depends on the care of the toy. But to be honest, there are ways to fix some of those issues too.
I would say most definitely out of all the Dinobots, it's the one that has the most issues or most tendencies of breakage and wearing out out of all of them.
Incidentally, something I just noticed now that I've got two of them, I don't know if the camera will pick it up. Let me get it turned just right here. The swirls are identical. You know, you think the swirls in the mold would be random depending on how the plastic was injected into the mold, but the swirls are identical on the gray plastic on every toy, apparently. You've got on the right rear dino leg, it's almost like a big V, and then you got like three small ones on the left dino leg. It's kind of like if you hold it upside down, it kind of looks like an M. Interesting note.
The only thing I can think of that could even cause something like that is when it's actually in the plastic's actually injected in the mold. It could be the way the mold's actually being heat cured as it's happening could cause that discoloration.
Well, it's just a visible dark swirl in the plastic, and apparently it's uniform, so it's across, it's like that on multiple versions, and both snarls that I have here, G1 snarls, have that exact same swirl in the exact same place. So it's kind of interesting. I just now noticed that. So Jim, what about snarl for you? What do you think about?
Well, snarl? As far as snarl goes, pretty much everything you guys have already mentioned, you know, the spring load fists, and the floppy head. I gotta say, in more recent memory, anytime I look at snarl now, since I've seen, you know, bits and pieces of that anime Parasite, there's this one scene where this dude's head splits open and he just like devours real fast the head of this other person. And when that happens, that dude's head looks almost exactly like G1 Snarl's dino head. It's almost spot on. And so anytime I look at Snarl now, that's what I see. And
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured you probably did.
Yeah,
I do. It's probably due to.
So how many people use the spring-loaded gimmick in Snarl's robot fists as a punching action whenever they played with it as a kid?
I will now.
I do. I remember taking like my Constructicons, and Snarl would go up to him, and I'd have his fist kind of drawn in. I'd hold it in and like let go with of it, and he'd like punch the Constructicon down. Yeah. Fun times.
Definitely a missed opportunity for like literally spring-loaded fists, just like, you know, any Shogun warrior or something like that. Mm-hmm. That would have been awesome.
Thoughts on Snarl, Don?
I like Snarl. I've always liked Stegosaurus. I like him a lot. He does have a few issues in robot mode, but he's just visually a very impressive dinosaur, and I like the robot mode too. It's again, him and Sludge kind of teeter back and forth on who my favorite is, because I got Snarl later in my collecting, but I've always liked the character as far as the looks of the character. Everybody else, you know, they have issues, so I like him a lot. He's just, you know, kind of there to complete the set because he does have some issues, which makes him kind of maybe not the best figure in robot mode, but visually in dinosaur mode, he's a great looking stegosaur. So, sorry, my throat's getting a little ragged right now.
That's cool. We're down to the last Dinobot, and then we'll talk a little bit about paddles here in a moment. Now, Grimlock, easily the most characterization out of all five Dinobots. And like I said earlier, he's probably one of the top tier or tier one characters in the Transformers franchise. You know, I mean, people recognize Grimlock almost instantly. Even if you're just a casual fan, if you saw the cartoon from the 80s, knew anything about Transformers from back then, most people would recognize Grimlock. I believe he's probably right up there. Voiced by the incomparable Greg Berger, very awesome guy. I always loved his characterization. And in the in the Marvel comic, he was characterized as an intelligent Transformer, but there was something in his speech processor that he could not articulate his thought into proper speech, which made him sound stupid, even though he was actually brilliant. And I thought that was a neat little character twist on him in the comics. Thoughts on Grimlock? I'm going to throw this out there. Anybody who wants to pop in first?
Real quick, I just wanted to mention, I've got this image here. Apparently, Japan has made a live-action version of Parasite recently. And I just wanted to pull this up so you could see what I was talking about. Screen share right quick. It looks almost exactly like Snarl. I think it's absolutely hilarious.
You guys
see that, right?
What the hell? It does.
That is G1 Snarl.
It does.
I had no idea that there was a live action version of this too, but yeah, that's how it looks in the anime too. That is Snarl.
It does. It looks like Snarl.
Do you have an action GIF where it actually shows that it's like biting someone's head off?
I was afraid of looking for something like that for the benefit of our viewers. I just noticed that this wasn't necessarily graphic. So, I mean, anything from the anime was a bit more graphic, so I avoided that.
Oh, okay. Now, listener Mike Boyle, he just posted a picture in our Facebook group, and it's some minty G1.
Ooh, fun.
Dinobots, getting ready to share it here.
Nice.
See, yeah, he even gets a screen share on the live show, and that's bye-bye. What you get. That's what you get from for participating live. Look how nice they are.
Okay.
Really, really nice shape.
Really pretty.
Yeah.
The horns on Slag don't look like they're torn up either.
No.
Meat grinder.
At a BotCon several years ago, it might have been OTFCC, the last OTFCC, I picked up a complete G1 Slag. It was near dead mint, and I think I gave like $50 for him back in the day.
Nice.
Okay, there we go. Stop. Now back to Grimlock. I know Jim kind of sidetracked us there with the thing, but Grimlock, what's your thoughts on Grimlock as a character and toy?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Fool.
Well, as a character, I have to say it was one of the most, one of the most fun characters. Cause I mean, here you've got this intergalactic civil war. You know, everybody's fighting and has their own thing, and you know, all sorts of stuff. And then you got Grimlock, who may walk on screen and say something totally off the wall, you know, intending to be serious, you know, some of the time. But you know, it brightened the mood a lot of the time. Anytime Grimlock was in an episode,
one of my favorite lines was from Grimlock's new brain. He looks up, sees this thing on the ceiling, and says, "This looks real rad. Gonna pull."
Yep, precisely. That is the sort of thing you can expect from Grimlock, especially in season 3, more so than the earlier. But yeah, a very, very fun character, brought a lot to the series. As a toy, well, it's a brick, but it's a pretty well proportioned brick for the most part. And it, like Snarl, you know, he looks better from the front than he does from the side. But from the side, he doesn't look horrible. It's a fun toy.
You know, I think it's a missed opportunity. And it was. It looks like it was engineered to have knees, like the knee joints.
It slightly has a little bit.
But it looks like they engineered it originally to have knees, but for some reason removed that capability from it.
Yeah.
Because I distinctly remember as a kid seeing, oh, it looks like his knees will bend. But then you're like, oh, no. Well, no, I'm not talking about the gray parts. I'm talking about the inside of the black part.
The hip?
Yeah.
It does a little bit, but very extremely little.
Yeah. And it's a missed opportunity. And I think it's just a little bit of plastic. If they removed a little bit of plastic, it could probably work as an actual I misspoke. As a knees, I meant hip. But, yeah, it could actually work as a hip.
Head, shoulders, knees, and toes.
Don, your thoughts on Grimlock?
My voice is about gone. I like him a lot. I think he's just he's a great looking figure in robot mode. Dino mode is a brick, but he looks like the cartoon. So I mean, you know, it's a very show accurate figure. That's what I like about the masterpiece. It's still G1 Grimlock, but it's like just advanced enough to give you the feel that to hide away all the stuff that they couldn't on the G1 version. But it's still Grimlock to the core of what the character is supposed to look like in both modes. So I like him a lot. You know, I probably would have got Grimlock first if the guy had him. But I got Sludge first, but I did when I finally got Grimlock. I think he was like the last Dinobot I actually needed to get to complete my collection, and it was just something satisfying about putting him right in the middle of his Dinobots, and it just had the Scroop shot on my shelf, and just really nice.
Yeah. Now, has everybody had a chance to talk about Grimlock? Briefly, Paddles. Brett, what do you know about Paddles?
I saw the pictures. It looks a lot like a really long-necked.
Well, I mean, what do you
Sludge?
What I'm talking about though is for those fans who are sitting here listening to the podcast or even watching the show and wondering who the hell is Paddles. I've never heard of Paddles.
The only thing I know is I know the name. I know that it's and I'm not into the technical names. I just know it's a big, looks like a sludge. With like little flappers instead of legs and a big long neck.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm Loch
Ness Monster. There you go.
Trying to
Nessie. Some that's exactly what it looks like.
No, it's a Transformer, so it'd be a Super Nessie.
Yeah, Mecha Nessie.
Well, this here is a third party version, Mecha form. I don't know if they're still going to release this or not, but it's basically a third-party version of Paddles. Depending on the quality, I think I might buy this just to have a Paddle. Mm-hmm. It's really neat. For the audio listeners, he's basically a sludge-like form, or is a plesiosaur, if you're familiar with what that is. And instead of having legs, he has fins. He's a seagoing dinosaur.
He's very similar to that one component of Magmatron. That has the long hinged neck.
Yeah, that's essentially what that component of Magmatron is a plesiosaur.
That's great. Now he can go up the creek.
Yes, with a paddle. And to be exact, I believe he's an Elasmosaur, component of Magmatron. I think it's Elasmosaur is the term. Yeah, and I'm boring Brett because he doesn't like dinosaurs. He's a hater.
No, I just don't get any of that crap. It's just
Ron, what was it again? Elasma?
Elasmosaur. Elasmosaur.
At first, I thought you said an asthma sore.
No, he has difficulty breathing. he carries his respirator. Yeah, he carries his respirator on a regular basis, and whenever he talks, he wheezes.
Hangs out with sea spray.
Yeah,
he's like wheezing.
I believe we've highlighted each of the Dinobots. fairly well. I'm reading some of the comments in the thing in the chat here. I think we've covered each of the Dinobots fairly well. I'd love to hear what the listeners think about each individual Dinobot. If you want to post them on our Facebook group in this thread that's pinned to the top, we usually leave the episode pinned to the top of the Facebook group for 1 week until the next episode airs. So if you're listening to this before the next episode airs, feel free to go in there and post. And even afterwards, after it's unpinned, it's still in there somewhere. Or you can tweet to us your thoughts at TFYLP about your favorite Dinobots and why they were. If you have any comments or questions, I want to thank Mike Boyle again for sharing that beautiful picture of those five pristine-looking G1 Dinobots. Are really nice. Again, the Dinobots, probably one of the best and most loved subgroups in Transformers. I really still think to this day they don't get enough official love, which is essentially why I absolutely jumped on board with the third-party Dinobot train. I got the Toy World combining ones so I could have a combining version of the Dinobots, and they also at the same time represent the comic appeal of the characters, and then the fans' toys, which are essentially the masterpiece versions. Hey, they're gorgeous.
I got one question. If either Hasbro or Takara or a third party made articulated high quality characters of the Rescue Bots, because the Rescue Bots do have in show, some of them have dinosaur modes. So what if they made a high quality representation of the Rescue Bot characters, but they have their dinosaur modes from the show? With would that be something you'd be interested in?
I'm not sure. The Rescue Bots aren't really something that I collect or even pay attention to. Now, there is a note that Grimlock carried over into the new RID line, although I can't for the life of me figure out why they had him green and black.
Yeah,
it's kind of silly. And his characterization is entirely different. He's solely comic relief, and he's nothing like what we imagine Grimlock.
And he's cyborg, basically. Yeah. He's cyborg.
Okay.
But it's just because this was brought up at BotCon by a person in the Hasbro room about getting actual, say, generation / universe / classics versions of the Rescue Bot characters for the, you know, characters for the collector, you know, the older collector. And then I do know from watching the show, it's a very good show, that they do have some dinosaur modes. So I thought I would just bring that up as an odd option to add more dinosaurs and get better versions of those characters.
I mean, it's one of those niche things that, like I said, I'm not so much on the Rescue Bots. Now, if we got updated G1 style Dinobots, I mean, they don't have to be there exactly, you know, slavish to the G1s. Right. But I'm not talking movie aesthetic either, because I had the movie Dinobots, and they really just didn't work for me, honestly. Yeah. Slog was probably the nicest, but the rubbery chest pieces and that really bugged me. Really,
it just looked way too skeletal for me. They didn't even appeal to me as Dinobots. Yeah,
exactly. If you're going to have Dinobots, have them as robotic dinosaurs. I mean,
I'm hoping
honestly, here's an idea though. If they would have done those Dinobots for the, you know, the movie ones, if they would have done them in like a glow in the dark plastic, I think it would have been more appealing because then you look like freaking boned dinosaurs running around, which I think that would have been better than what they did.
So the knights could go at night.
Exactly. There you go.
Well, I think we've kind of beat the topic to death, but again, listeners, we'd love to hear what your thoughts are on the Dinobots. Also, stickers versus tampos. I mean, that's an ongoing thing. I hear and see a lot of argument back and forth, what's better, what people like. So I'd love to hear what you guys think on that, too. You know, if you're listening to us on the audio version, please like, rate, and subscribe us. Subscribe to us on whatever outlet you get us from. Want to thank you for continuing to support TFYLP. We've been around for 200 plus episodes now, and we'll hopefully be around for 200 plus more. I want to thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week. I am Daron Land with Headmaster Don, Jim Black, Brett, and Jason. We will see you next time on TFYLP.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.